show. My next guest is our very own, of course, Nestor Aparicio. Nestor, welcome in.
Always good to be with you on the eve of one of the great prediction days of my life. You know, I hit one Super Bowl, and every year I talk about it. You know, just talk about made the right prediction. It was the Houston game. I was in the shuttle bus going over, and I thought, yeah, you know, I got a 40-minute ride over to the Reliant thing, and I tweeted out the score. And when Matt Ryan was up, whatever it was, what was that score that was on the ring? 28-6 or whatever it was at the time?
28-3, yeah.
28-3, yeah, right? Yeah. So I hit the score. Like, I nailed the score at 1 o'clock in the afternoon all over social media. Whatever the final score was, I got it right. And I figured after that, no more predictions for me, man. That's it.
I've been trying to make a prediction, Esther. It's been terrifying. I've been going back and forth, and you know, I have reasons to think why Tampa Bay is going to win the game, and then I have more reasons to think as to why Kansas City is going to win the game, right? And I just flip-flop, and half the guests have said Kansas City, and the other half today have said Tampa Bay. So I am conflicted and right down the middle and looking for guidance from you.
Oh, my God. You're in the wrong place for guidance. You know, who comes to me for parental guidance? Here's where I am on it. And you know, I had a chat with my pal Todd Schuler about this earlier because we were talking about watching those championship games 2 weeks ago. And when I watched them both play that day, and again, Dan, I'm not that familiar with either one of them, much more so with the Chiefs. I watched them. I did not watch the Tampa Bay Bucs play a lot this year. And you know, I'm a red zone guy, much more so than you. So, you know, I'm seeing things that happen. I follow the league. I don't follow the league the way maybe I did 20 years ago in that way where I'm breaking down every play when I was nationally syndicated and, you know, like literally might be on the phone with a defensive coordinator this week, right? Or at the Super Bowl where I'm at every table and going to go around table to table and talk about a team. I'm not that versed. I'm just, I'm an educated fan, but I'm a fan, right? And watching them play that day, the Chiefs, to me, they're the better football team. And if Tom Brady were just number 12 and not a 43-year-old guy, just a really good quarterback and a good football player at this point, you'd look at this and I think you'd say it's a 7-point spread. I mean, I looked at it and said the Chiefs are 7 points better than them. And then it comes out 3 hours later, I'm way off, I'm not Mr. Vegas, you know, it's a field goal, right? And I spent some time with a handicapper pal of mine, Brandon Lang, who usually sits with me down at the Super Bowl, and he came on with me this week, and he was talking about that 3, 3.5, and you know the money line in Vegas and what you're going to need to do in order to try to get it off 3. And I keep thinking to myself, like, it's Tom Brady's worth like 4 points to me in this, right? Because I'm thinking about it like you. But in the end, if the Chiefs win, I'm going to say they were the better team. And in the end, if Tom Brady gives me a bad beat, if I'm a gambling person, and I'm not, I don't gamble in any of this stuff. I know too much about it. But I would say with Brady, betting against him, you do so at your own peril, right?
It's hard to bet against the GOAT, but again, you know, you got a young man now peaking and Patrick Mahomes in the right system, got the right head coach, has the right momentum, and it's just such a difficult task for a team to go back to the Super Bowl right after winning it. It's just the most difficult thing in sports is to get there and to win it. And for him to be in that position at such an early stage in his career, he's got some mojo. He's got some good things going on. That's the hardest thing for me to bet against.
And there's a level of confidence about 40 other guys that did it last year. And did it last year when a lot of ish went wrong, right? I mean, they were behind in games, you know, down and out. You know, didn't wake up on the right side of the bed in Miami that day. You know, all of that, right? I'm thankful for Jimmy Garoppolo on the other side, which I almost forgot about a year ago, right? I mean, I go to these games and I forget who plays in them. But for me, as good of a football game, right? If we forget the plague, right? Forget the Ravens, forget you and me being Ravens guys or who's in the game or whatever. But if this were 1988, we didn't even have a team and it's Joe Montana against, you know, whomever, right? You look at it and you'd say, well, this, I hope this is a hell of a football game. You know, I mean, I hope at 10 o'clock on Sunday night, it's a 4-point, 3-point, 6-point, 7-point, 8-point, you know, the kind of game that Tom Brady can do something incredible at the end, or Mahomes can do something incredible at the end, or there can be some unsung hero making a pick, a play, you know, some Anthony Mitchell type, right? This is neat. I mean, it's really neat. And then for me, I put something up, right? I mean, I've been to the last 27 Super Bowls. And if you, you know, buy me a minute and a beer and a tear, I remember the day. Do you remember the day that Oakland played Philadelphia in the Super Bowl at the Superdome, the Plunkett-Jaworski game? Does that mean anything? Like, does
of course.
It, do you remember that day in your life?
Absolutely.
Okay, so at this point in my life, my father, we went to church every Sunday. So I want to look that date up because this is kind of an interesting, you know, point in my life where I decided what I was going to do with my life. So what Super Bowl was that? Oakland-Philadelphia Super Bowl was probably like 15, 14, 15. Okay, Super Bowl 15. It was on, I don't think I've ever told this story on the radio, so I'm glad I'm recording it. January 25th. 1981. So I'm 12.
Yep.
I'm 12.
Yep. You
okay?
got it. You got it.
Okay. So I'm 12 years old. We went to church. I'm in eighth grade. So I come back from church. We stopped at JK Bakery, which Pete DeLutis would know as Raven Zone or Raven Stuff, wherever it is, 46th Street by crossing Blackwell's, where you know it, crossing the Eastwood Inn.
Raven Store.
Thank you very much. Very good. So that they had delicious, incredible Polish family, the Krajewski family. Vicky, I went to school with her. And so we stop by there and we get baked goods. We come home. And I could be wrong. I want to look and see if I know when the kickoff was. Like if they kicked off at 3 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 1 o'clock, whatever time of the day it was. And this is in 1981. We didn't have cable, or did we just get cable? Like, we're right on the front end of having cable, okay? So cable's either here or really close. No, it would have had to been cable. Either way, everything in my house went out. So we didn't have television. So it was either the electricity or it was the cable, but it wasn't like regular TV, so it must have been the electricity. It must have been electricity, because we had no way to watch the game that day. And we listened to the first quarter. My dad had a radio. My dad listened to a billion Orioles games, Colts games. My dad and I listened to Sports Talk with Ordell Bracy from the Flaming Pit during that. I mean, you know, the Colts are still in the league. You know, so this is where we are. The Colts still exist. So the game starts, and we did not have television because our cable, maybe it was just our neighborhood. I don't know what it was, but we couldn't watch the game. So the first quarter, my dad's, you know, we're waiting for cable or whatever, and the game came back on, and all was well in the world. And I said to my dad that day, yeah, Pop, man, you think one day you and me could go to a Super Bowl game? We've been to a World Series game, 79. You think we could go to one Super Bowl game? And, you know, my pop was like, yeah, you know, sure, whatever, you know. I remember us applying for tickets for the Final Four in Dallas in 86. We didn't win the lottery, but we filled out. My dad got the money over to the mall, got a money order. We did it all, right? So that day I thought, man, I'm going to go to one Super Bowl. 1991, the Oilers, my Oilers and your Oilers. And I know you remember this season, right? The Oilers were really good. It was Warren Moon. Do you remember that year?
Yeah, absolutely.
It was the Mark Rippon year, right? Did you go to that game at RFK, that Oiler-Redskin game? I did.
I did not.
I went to, you know the one I'm talking about? Howfield missed the field goal?
Yep.
Okay, so the Oilers were like 8-0, and the Redskins were like 7-1. It was a November game. I love having Google then, because I can just like look this up. I can say Oilers, Redskins. I know it was 91. There it is, Oilers 91. John Steadman got me a ticket for this game. I had never been to a Redskin game. I didn't know where to park. You know, I had been down there for a Genesis concert in U2, but the Redskins were a big deal. The Redskins were 9-0, were 8-0, and the Oilers were 7-1. And they went in there. They lost 16-13, missed an awful field goal. Ian Howfield missed a field goal at the end.
Yep.
Ernest Biner's with the Redskins. Lorenzo Way. I still talked to Chip Namias about that game. Warren Moon, 25 of 44 for 250. So That at that time, John Stedman got me a ticket for that game, and I went down there. My seat. Do you remember the African American chief who wore the Wahoo thing that always had the white get up? He shook my hand. He shook my hand. I swear to you, Dan. I was a fan. I was just a fan. I worked at the paper, and he shook my hand. I was wearing my Oiler gear. I was wearing my Elvin Bethea jersey. And he shook my hand and he said to me, congratulations on winning. He congratulated me before the field goal that they missed, right? And so that time, Stedman said to me, Senor, I'm going to console you. I think the Oilers are going to make the Super Bowl, my friend. I'm going to make sure you have tickets. So me... And this is the Greek connection that comes into this, the Dundalk Greek connection. Are you ready for this? Who do you think it involves? Who have I implied in your life that I know, that you know, that I spent every Thanksgiving with?
Oh, you know what? I forget now. I'm drawing a blank.
John Raphaelides.
There you go, Raphaelides.
John Raphaelides was my roommate. And I said to Johnny Raph, if I get us two tickets to the Super Bowl in Minnesota, you get off work. I think he was working at Sherwin-Williams in the paint department then. And he said, yeah, man, let's go do it. So Stedman walks in to the newspaper the week I retired. I retired on Martin Luther King Day, 1992. A couple weeks before that, it's Christmas time. He brought me two tickets for the Super Bowl that he got from the league office. My seats were on the 50-yard line. Donald Trump was three rows below me. Evander Holyfield was in a row below me. I sat with Nat Moore. I met Steve Sable for the first time in my life that day. He was sitting in the press box 3 hours before the game, and I shook his hand. I said, Mr. Sable, love you. Thank you, Nestor, you know, the whole deal. And he changed my life, put me on top 10. So my first Super Bowl, I did 27 Super Bowls. I missed the next two, the Leon Lett one. I went to the Pittsburgh. I kid Marvin because Marvin lost that game. Marvin has an office in Sun Devil Stadium now, and he lost that game. It was the Neil O'Donnell, Larry Smith, Barry Switzer game, and I've been at every Super Bowl since. So whatever wing dip you've had, parties you've had, I've been at every Super Bowl. And someone today threw me a note and said, man, you must really be bumming you're not there. And I'm like, my God, I've been to 27 of them. How in the world can I be upset about not being at this one? You know what I mean? Like, pinch me.
No, you can just sit back and let the fan come out on you and just enjoy it for what it is, right? And just watch history unfold in front of you and hope that we see a very good game that comes down to its last possession. That would be ideal.
I just want to see a great football game. And I think about, how about this, Den? In that era, that Redskin-Bills game was a terrible game, pretty much, right? And it was the end of that era where all the games were terrible. Remember that? Every year, we get block pools and we talk about the spread and 8 points. And, you know, Joe Montana would be, or Steve Young would be up 55-13 over the San Diego Chargers, right? Like, there was a whole decade of really bad Super Bowls. We haven't had, we've had unbelievably, think of our Super Bowl from 8 years ago, right? Like,
that's incredible.
Back
then in that era, Nestor, the NFC was so strong with the Washington team. Then you had the Giants, you had the Cowboys, you had the 49ers. So the balance of power was heavy. I mean, the NFC championship game was really the Super Bowl. Those were the two best teams in the league. And the AFC represented, whether it was San Diego or Denver or Buffalo, it was probably the fourth or fifth best team in the league.
You know what's been interesting, Dan, is over the course of our lifetime, and I know you'll agree with this, there have been some really horrific playoff blowouts, right? Like, you know, there have been some 55-7 playoff games in the modern football era. Not many recently that really get out of hand, you know, really out of hand, but that's happened. Super Bowls, we haven't, you know, these have been, by and large, they've really been good, competitive, interesting. You know, Brady's, you either, you know, he's Ric Flair, right? You love him or you hate him. Woo! Right? But but that's why we watch, and it's the biggest game of the year in the middle of a plague. Dan, I shared on my Twitter a picture of the radio row down there. It's just, you know, it's just a different time right now for all of us, right? And I think we all were reminded that. I was on the street with my wife a couple hours ago with a mask on, you know, and we're all reminded of where we are. I'm grateful. You're grateful. Hey, man. About five times in the summer, we talked about whether they were going to have a Super Bowl, whether they were going to have a season, and here we are talking about, even though we're not in it, we had a good year, and we're talking about a really good football game, and, you know, we're getting on the right side of the vaccine, which we're talking about a lot here at Baltimore Positive. So let's see. Keep the good mojo going. Get the good dip out for Sunday, you know, whatever bean dip. My wife's working on some spinach and artichoke dip. She's going to try to work some magic here this weekend with some new culinary projects to honor the Super Bowl.
You know what? Enjoy it. Have fun. And I'm sure we'll have a lot more to talk about in the aftermath of the event. Let's just have a good time. Watch it for what it is. And be grateful that they're playing it.
Well, that's what all that old storytelling and all that nonsense was about me saying, you know what, man? We're here. The game's on. I'll see you in L.A. next year. Let's all get this thing figured out so we can go back to doing things the way we used to do it. And that when Lamar goes to a Super Bowl, you know, we're going to be able to participate fully. So, you know, so for that, I'll see you over Coons Ford. But, hey, I'll see you on Monday. We'll talk about how this thing turned out, right?
Sounds great. Looking forward to it. Nestor, be well.
Appreciate you.
Thank you. There he goes, Nestor J. Aparicio here in 1570 AM WNST. We'll take a quick break. Come back right after this. Hi, I'm Dennis Klein.